There is a podcast brewing that's about to take over podcasting for good. The only podcast that you are going to need to tune into day in, day out, is the Member Guest Podcast.
If I can hit it down the middle of the fairway, that's great. But again, with the driver right now, the driver sucks.
John Daly, and you're listening to the Member Guest Podcast. Rip it, rip it.
I see you're laughing a little bit there, Dr. Justice. Welcome to the Member Guest Podcast. This is one of the hosts, Andy and Tony. I'm here to join with a very special guest, Dr. Izzy Justice. This is a guest that has been making waves recently and making appearances on many of the podcasts that a lot of our listeners listen to. And Dr. Justice just wants to bring a number of different amazing aspects that how you can improve your game on a daily basis, as well as, you know, talk about his profession and how he got there. Welcome to the show, Dr. Justice.
Thank you, Tony and Andy. I'm delighted to be here. I look forward to getting into it and sharing some knowledge that will be helpful to your guests.
Excellent. So we really do appreciate it. I came across your profile on Instagram and YouTube just when I was trying to, just like most golfers out there trying to improve their games. And I was coming off of a round where I just really wasn't putting all that well. It just felt like I wasn't engaged. And so I was just trying to find a way to help myself and, you know, going down the rabbit hole at night, laying in bed, watching YouTube videos as I do sometimes. And I came across some of the videos of some of the work that you've been doing. When I saw on the title, it was about brain scans and I had just got done watching, the episode on Netflix, for quarterback Kirk Cousins was doing some work in his car with, you know, a brain scan headset on. And it really just kind of got me thinking that, you know, all these professional athletes around the world are doing these types of things. And so it really just kind of hit home. It just was a little bit serendipitous, when I was watching it. And so it got me super excited. And I had mentioned to one of our other, co-hosts, Johnny, regarding some of your work. And so that's kind of how we came across you. And then I really dove into some of the other podcasts you've been on and watched a bunch of your videos. So very excited about having you on and wanted to welcome you. So thanks again for coming. And why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and kind of how you got to this place where you are so successful today?
Yeah, well, thank you very much. And I often use the term that both my professional career and my personal life are very Forrest Gumpian. Because, I'm being honest, it's largely by a series of just crazy coincidences and accidents. I did not wake up when I was a kid and say, oh, I would like to study the brain, or I'd like to be a neuroscientist, or those kinds of things. And, you know, I got my doctorate back in 2007. At that point, the technology that I'm using now, the knowledge that I have now, didn't even exist. So that's how old I am in terms of, number one, that's how old I am. But number two, that's how new this technology and therefore the insight is. But, you know, I always tell people that, and I'm biased, as a scientist, I don't have a lot of opinions. I deal with facts only. I don't have the luxury, but this is an opinion. I feel like one of the groundbreaking seminal moments of understanding just the human beings happened around 2014, 2015. Like that to me was since the beginning of time. And I know that's a crazy statement, but allow me to explain. But since the beginning of time until, you know, as recently as just 8 years ago, we were never able to look into the human brain wirelessly. We've been looking into the brain since the 1930s, 1940s. We've known there's electricity in the brain, but electricity is hertz, it's frequency. And we were never able to, unlike almost any other part of the human body, guys, we can do heart transplants. I can cut open and take your appendix out, your kidney. But every time as human beings that we even cut any part of the brain, we would paralyze people, we would harm people. So it was always a place that we never had access to because it was such a delicate, you know, organ. And so although we were able to look into the brain for 70, 80 years, the only way that we could, guys, is if you went to a doctor's office, and typically, honestly, it was a psychiatric doctor's office, and you sat in a chair with a helmet and like 500 wires coming out of your head. What really changed in again, 2014, 2015-ish, was Bluetooth. And I know that sounds simple, but suddenly I can put that same device on someone while they're shooting a free throw, while they're writing an email, while they're solving a problem, while they're collaborating with someone else, while they're trying to make a putt. And all of the, and it very quickly outdated many of the previous frameworks of thinking, some of which were my own, you know. So I will never say that psychology or all the previous frameworks that we've been using to try to understand human beings, especially from a performance perspective, are wrong. I will just say that we have access now where we don't have to guess anymore. We don't have to use cliches like be in the moment, forget about the other shot, and one shot at a time. You know, we know all these cliches are good and they're right, but it's not an action. And every human being software, so you know, your life experiences, Andy, and your life experiences, Tony, and mine are completely different. That means the software in our brain is different. That means what works for you, Andy, at a certain point in time is not going to be what works for Tony at a certain point in time. And, you know, most of the solution that people use when it comes to this kind of work is, oh, just breathe or take a deep breath or those kinds of things. And that is one technique. And so the technology that we have really has allowed us now to not guess anymore. And then finally, I'll share with you guys that almost 95% of what I know now about golfers, especially with the short game and how they practice, is an accident. I didn't know what I was looking for. I just knew I had a telescope and I could see things. And I started to look for patterns. And that's how all of this information came to be. It was really a series of sort of crazy coincidences and accidents. And I just happened to have enough of a background to know what to look for, is basically how I came to all of the data that I have.
That's amazing. I think what you're saying definitely really resonates a lot with me, Dr. Justice, for a couple of reasons. You know, I would say, like, on the Member Guest podcast, you know, we're all very intellectually curious about golf and improving. And, you know, we've really dug into a number of the different areas and variables, I would say, to playing good golf, right? Obviously, one of those would be technique. And I think we're pretty advanced in our understandings of how to deliver the golf club. You know, another area that has been somewhat of a recent one for me that's been interesting is digging more into like the emotional side of golf and kind of how you, what feelings you might have on the golf course and how you maybe play better or worse when you're in certain emotional states. I think what's really interesting to me about what you're saying is I'm a person who has what I would describe as a really busy brain, right? Like 10,000 talking monkeys. And none of the like Bob Rotella books and stuff that I've dug into has ever really made a huge difference for me in terms of how my brain functions on the golf course. And I would maybe describe those things as like short-term solutions, so to speak. I'm curious, like, kind of what you've found or what have been some of the things that have really surprised you that you thought was true kind of before this 2014, 2015 timeframe. That has turned out to just be very different as you've gotten more data and a better understanding of how things are actually working with the brain.
Yeah, what a great question and a really good way to, I think, kick off the hour with you guys. So first of all, there is no such thing as muscle memory. I am a student of the game, and golf is a very, very small part of my business. I work with all athletes, essentially target sports. I actually work with a NASCAR driver, and there isn't a target sport there. But, you know, it's amazing how what is common in all of human performance, and for that matter, life, is our brain. It is the tool that we use for everything. It's the tool that you use with your spouses, significant others, children, parents, friends, and also to hit a putt and also to, you know, remember how to hit a certain type of a shot. So I think, you know, if you think of a quadriplegic has a perfectly functioning brain, and their neuromuscular, all their muscles and the body parts work fine as well. But there's a spinal injury, usually of some kind, that means the connection between the brain and the muscles is cut off, so they can't move anything. So I always talk about that to let everybody know is that really the brain controls everything. So when I know that Ben Hogan, for example, and I'm a huge fan of his, you know, he always talks about digging it out of the dirt. Malcolm Gladwell talked about, hey, if you want to be an expert at something, you know, you got to have 10,000 hours of reps. And both of those are sort of debunked right now. And I'm not saying that they were wrong. I'm saying that this idea that I'm just going to pound my way through something, like it's almost a way to sort of punish your muscles. But the real learning when you're hitting a ball or trying to practice something is not going to your muscles. Muscles have no memory. It's going to your brain. So there are three things that the brain controls that I think, you know, to me, this is the starting point. And then I want to talk about those monkeys that you just talked about, Andy.
Yeah.
So the three things that the brain controls are, one is muscle sequencing. Now, think of walking, something that you and I do every single day without a second thought, but that's a sequencing. You put one leg in front of the other, and each leg at the bottom of the feet has so many nerve endings that really allow us to be balanced. There's a reason we're not tilted one way or the other when we're walking and we're not falling off. So there's a lot of communication that goes on when we're trying to sequence our muscles. And a golf swing, a chipping, a putt, it's a sequence. You go back and you go forward. That's a sequence. And the reason there's a sequence is because we want to generate force. We want to hit that ball and send it somewhere. It's the brain that controls that sequencing. Number two, the force that you apply, yes, it's exerted by the muscles, but it's the brain that tells the muscles how hard or soft to hit something. The muscles don't make that decision. And then the last thing, which is what I think makes golf so difficult, and in my view, the most difficult target sports of all, is the brain is the only place where the target is held and your eyes are not on the target. So imagine Steph Curry or sort of any basketball player or a lacrosse player or a soccer, any target sport. In almost every case, either their eyes are on the target or it's in their vision. But in golf, your eyes are down because you're trying to hit the ball. So, but that we only get the sense of force, meaning how hard do I want to hit this putt, if in our brain the scale or the distance or where you want the ball to go to or enter the hole is playing in your head. So those three things are controlled by the brain, the muscle sequencing, the force, and the target. So let me say one more thing and then I'll pause. Now, what makes it so difficult now, and I think why it's going to be even more difficult, is the human condition that we're in right now. So, Andy, your situation is not a character flaw. So, Dr. Daniel Amen has done almost 100,000 brain scans. I've done close to 14,000 in general. Golf is it's less, and other scientists in the whole world have done these brain scans, and we all have the same data. We talk a lot with each other. We have our forums. We all have the same data, and basically, the data is saying that the average EEG, so EEG is the noise in your head, those monkeys, or the normal person today is the equivalent of a schizophrenic patient from the 1950s.
Oh, wow. That's mind-blowing. Makes sense.
That's because, I mean, if you think about it, 100 years ago, most people never traveled more than 50 miles from where they were born, 100 years ago.
Yeah.
Same threats, same stimuli. 100 years ago, people didn't live past the age of 40. So our brains were not designed to live in the world that we live in today, where we're constantly consuming stimuli from our phones and our devices. So why that is relevant to golf is, just think about this. If there's constant noise in your head, that means some signal from your brain to your muscles about how to properly hit a shot or to hit the right force on it, or as you're looking down to putt, to even remember what you just read. Like, we're at the mercy of our own distraction. And so the example I'll give you, and then I'll pause, is let's say that you're about to hit a putt, Tony, and right in your backstroke, someone yelled, blah, 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 blah. Would you concede that that's going to throw you off and you'll miss hit that putt?
I would blame it on that.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, yes. That's not a trick question. It's true. Because your brain has something different to process other than what you're about to go do.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But now imagine that your own brain is doing that to you every 3 to 10 seconds, because there's just so much noise in our heads. So that's why I think that, you know, target sports are much more difficult, especially putting, because in putting, the accuracy is a premium. If with your driver, you miss it by 5 yards, you're fine. With the iron shots, you miss it by 5 yards, you're fine. You miss a putt by 5 millimeters, that's a lip out, mm-hmm. right? So that's where the noise in our head is going to be most penal. It's when we come to the short game, because that's where accuracy is absolutely a premium. That's why I think that the short game in general is going to be more and more challenging unless we learn how to use our brains. And I can teach you a few techniques yeah. that are different from the Rotella stuff.
Well, maybe like before we get into that, this seems like a common sense question, but I'm actually curious. Do you have a lot of performance data on people that are functioning more optimally with like a more quiet brain? Like, is that true? Is it true that the less noise you have in your brain, the better you perform? And kind of maybe talk to us about like the scale that you see there of performance.
Yeah. So 100% yes. And that's not new information. We have yeah. known that for at least 10, 15 years. So let me explain to you why that is true. And you can YouTube this. There's so much research on this. Like I'm at the tail end of that argument.
Yeah.
So, mm-hmm. but that argument has been made for forever. If one of the questions when I speak, I ask people is describe your round of golf. Okay, I tell you what, let's just do it here. So Andy and Tony, I want you to think of the last round of golf that you played where you were completely in the zone. Like it was one of your best rounds. Kind of go back. Now I want both of you one at a time to give me one word answers that describes how you were thinking or feeling during that amazing round of golf. Andy, one word?
Light.
Light. Okay. Tony?
Yeah, I was going with quiet or calm.
Quiet. Okay. Andy, one more word?
Free.
Free. Okay. Tony, one more word?
I said two already, so I'll use calm.
Calm. Okay, fair enough. So the four words that you used were light, quiet, free, and calm, right? These are all attributes of very low frequency in the brain.
Yeah.
So believe it or not, I have done my own research. About the only books that I read now are autobiographies, and I try to go back as far as I can. I look at scientists, inventors, successful people, athletes, coaches. And if you ask any human being to describe when they are at their best, all those human beings will use words like light, quiet, calm, free, focused, you know, stress-free, slow is another mm-hmm. thing that you hear mm-hmm. a lot. So being the best version of yourself is not a secret. It's never been a secret. All right. But let me explain to you why. In this state, so that we can measure frequency in the brain. So frequency is hertz, cycles per second. And we can go, when we're sleeping, we're somewhere around 3 to 5 hertz. And when we're really mad about to throw something, we're, you know, 100 plus hertz, right? So that's the range. This state that you're talking about, the light, the quiet, the calm, the free, that's somewhere between 5 and about 15 hertz. That's your alpha, theta zone. Wow. Now, there are two things that happen in this state. So this is really important, Andy. And just at a personal level, I want you to understand this. When there is low frequency in your brain, there are two big things that happen that allow you to perform at your best. The first one is because there's no traffic in your brain can retrieve all of its past memories, some article that you read, some video that you saw, some conversation that you had, the last good shot that you hit with this club, or how you came back from here, because there's no competition for your brain to retrieve those memories. right? The second thing that it does is that it gives permission or access, unfiltered access to your senses. So our senses are much more heightened. We see things bigger. Like when I work with basketball players and they're in this state, they say things like, the basket feels like it's 10 feet wide. Mm-hmm. It's obviously not 10 feet wide, but it feels that way. So our sense of taste and smell and sight, and because we only have five doors essentially to the brain, which are five senses, but they communicate unfiltered to our brain. And so you see things, you hear things, you feel the wind, and that is a very athletic stage to be in. That's when you're in the proverbial present moment. So being in this low, calm state does those two things. It allows you to retrieve mm-hmm. your best memories and skills, and two, it allows your senses to be heightened, the combination of which is what ultimately is very high level of performance.
That's really fascinating. And I just a quick follow-up question on that, and then we can move on to tools and techniques. But so let's just say I have a fault in my swing and I spend a bunch of time drilling, doing reps to make a better swing, right? Would you then say that if you go on the golf course with a swing thought or swing thoughts around those changes, in some ways it's sort of counterproductive in that you're not allowing your brain to access all those reps that you put in,
yeah,
drilling it the right way?
So I will give you a two-part answer. So in my line of work, my phone never rings when people are playing well, ever. You know, people always call me not only when they're bottom, but usually rock bottom. That's when they call me. 100% of the time, especially golfers, but in all sports, 100% of the time, which means in every single case, the first problem that I have to deal with is that the volume of noise that is in their head. And with golfers is they've gone from one instructor to another or one swing thought to another, and now they have 50 of them in their head. All right. So that's
guilty.
That's just a fact, is that a lot of these golfers, their solution, it just seems obvious to even elite golfers that when things aren't going well, I got to go fix my swing. And what I always tell people is, yes, you know, I think any instructor can look at any golf swing and will find a way to make it better. So that's a given. And a lot of my good friends are golf instructors. So I honor the knowledge that they bring. I'm not being critical of them at all. But I do find that us golfers are notorious for spending hours and hours and hours fixing the wrong problem. Mm-hmm. I will tell you, if you don't have a target in your head, a ton of mechanical flaws are going to show up because your brain doesn't know what to tell its muscles. Mm. So your typical miss is not going to show up. The other thing I'll tell you, so the second part of the answer is, I think technical thoughts are fine so long as, and this is important, that they are in a sequence. So it's okay to have one technical thought, but that to me should be the first thought. Like, let's say, I mean, for me, my technical thought is I have a bad habit of sort of taking the club inside a lot, you know, because I don't pay attention. So my technical thought is take it parallel. But here's the key. It's okay to have that technical thought, but that technical thought cannot be your last thought. You must combine that technical thought with the target. Okay, so I want to come up more parallel so that I can send the ball there.
Yeah.
So I think if you can combine the two, because, you know, I have a book coming out early next year. The title is Golf is a Target Sport. It's so easy to think golf is a swing sport. It's not a swing sport. Find me, you know, maybe Adam Scott's swing is perfect, but there are a million golf swings of all shapes and sizes, especially at the club level. I mean, I play with guys at my club. They have swings that if you would look at it, you're like, this person cannot break, you know, 100, and they're scratch.
Yeah.
You know, like they have awkward swings and they're not even lined up correctly and they're coming out to end. But that's how they play. Whatever they see in their mind, they have sort of figured it out. But as long as you make target the king, like whatever swing thought you have,
yeah,
don't forget that the purpose of the swing thought is to send the ball there, and you must hold the there in your head. And the there can be a shape, a cut, a draw. It can be a trajectory. It can be a landing spot. It can be a bunker, a tree, you know, a side of the pin where the hole is. You know, so always make the target the last thought in your head.
How small of a target? So, like, you know, everybody hears small kind of thing. Like, if I'm 180 yards away, should my target be a 10-foot wide circle, or should it be like 3 feet left of the pin?
So, what a great question, Tony. And this has been one of my accidental discoveries. I've had many, but the myth used to be, you know, that small target, small miss. If you can find a study that shows that, I would love to see it. What I find is a better, because it's not small target or big target. It's not the size of the target. So I call it, and this is a very non-sexy term, but it's the only one that I can come up with. If you guys can come up with one, let me know. But the best targets are holdable targets. It doesn't matter whether it's big or small. If something is that obvious to you over there, like a dead tree or a big cloud or a weird shaped bunker or a shadow of a tree on a pin, like whatever target is the one that it just stands out to you, like an old pitch mark, something that you can hold. So I call it holdable. Again, it's not a sexy term at all.
Yeah.
You know? But think about it. It's not whether the target, sometimes they're small, sometimes smaller targets are more holdable than bigger ones, but sometimes bigger ones are. So don't think small, big. Just look and say, you know, what two or three targets are out there and which one can I hold the best?
Interesting. Wow, that's really interesting.
So when you say hold, what does that look like? Are you like in your mind, are you like you're looking at the ball, but you're actually like thinking tree, or are you thinking like what the tree looks like? Or
all right,
does that make sense? I don't know exactly what I'm asking.
But can I do a little activity with you, Tony?
Please do.
Okay. So, Tony, where are you right now? Where do you live?
We are in Excelsior, Minnesota.
Minnesota, okay. Is that where you grew up?
No.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up in South Dakota, a small town in South Dakota.
Okay. All right. In about 10 seconds, if you can just trust me, I promise you I'm not going to embarrass you. In about 10 seconds, I'm going to ask you a question. I want you to close your eyes, and I want you to answer this question to me, okay?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Close your eyes. I want you to describe your childhood bedroom to me. The house that you grew up. Tell me what's in there, shapes, sizes, colors. Go ahead.
The color of the room is kind of a baby blue. I have a poster of Michael Jordan on the wall. I have a twin bed with a desk, kind of like an old school style desk in the corner. I have couple of trophies on some shelves on the north end of the room.
Okay. So hold on. So what you did there, Tony, is the most important skill in putting. You just described something that you were not looking at. You just described something not only you were not looking at, but it was in the distance past. So when you say what is a holdable target, it should be something that you can describe in the same way that you just described your room.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So as your eyes were closed, were you not seeing your room?
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, I can picture it. Your head. I can picture
the Michael Jordan photo where he's holding the two basketballs out, the Wings poster.
Yes, I know that one very well. So that to me is the answer to your question. You are holding something that your eyes are not looking at. And that's why people always say, oh, it's a left cup putt, or it's a left edge cup, or a right cup, or this, that, the other. You know, to me, those are just one type of target. But the more that you can describe what you want the ball to do, or where you want the ball to go as it is entering the hole, in the same way that you describe your brain. So I'm here telling you and your audience that the most important skill in putting is your ability to describe something that you're not looking at. It's not your putter. It's not your grip. It's not your stroke. The only technical thought that you need to have when putting is hit the ball in the middle of the putter face. Now, how many putting people will tell you that? And the reason I know that is because I literally have had hundreds of people in my studio here, hundreds flying in from all over the country. I promise you, as God is my witness, I have never changed someone's grip, someone's putter, someone's stroke. To be honest with you, I don't feel qualified to. All I've done is I've put them into that state that you describe as light, quiet, calm, and free. I've used the EEG. I've asked them questions. We do these little neuro hacks, and I move them into that state. So no matter what grip or putter or stroke they have, suddenly when the target is in your head, those three things happen well. The muscle sequencing, the force that you apply, and they suddenly have the smoothest strokes.
Wow, that's amazing.
So I mean, easy to make putting complicated. It's not.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think we've established that the brain is in a perilous place today, versus where it's been in the past, and that, a quieter mind equals better results. And that one of the most important things with creating a quiet mind is to create a target focused mind. It sounds like you would say.
Absolutely.
What are other tools? I'm thinking about the real world scenario of, you know, I'm on the first tee. The mind's racing a million miles a minute. What are other tools, that you've found in your work that can benefit golfers or maybe even within the target system? And as an aside, I think it's fascinating to know that Tiger grew up learning how to meditate, which is very interesting. And Earl would tell him to take a picture of the hole when he would putt. And so he was only envisioning that mental picture. These are things that perfectly align, I think, with what you're describing. Other kind of tools to combat the busy brain.
Yeah, there are many, and I'll share two or three with you now. So first, let's talk about talking with your brain and talking with your eyes. So let's go back to the scenario, Andy, that you just said. I'm going to give you two comments, and you tell me which one is talking with my brain, and you tell me which one is talking with my eyes, okay? So I'm on the first tee. So I'm saying to myself, gosh, I better not screw this one up. I need to, you know, play well today. My buddies are watching me. Am I talking with my eyes or am I talking with my head?
Your head.
Okay. The next thing I'm going to say is, there's the bunker over there. Right on top of the bunker, there's this cart path. There's a mound over there. I'm going to try to start the ball over there and fit it back into the fairway. Am I talking with my eyes or my head?
Eyes.
Exactly. So in my book, I talk a lot about, you know, you can talk with your eyes, right? So Tony, I picked on you with your bedroom. So Andy, can I pick on you?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, of course.
Get ready and buckle up, Dr. Justice.
Yeah, it's an insane asylum in here, Dr. Izzy. This is a lot of us.
Do you have a favorite childhood rhyme or rhythm or, you know, like Baba Black Sheep, or is there anything like that you, or is there a tune that's in your head that you like?
Probably just the Sports Center. Da-na-na, da-na-na.
Okay. How long can you do that? Can you do that for like 20 seconds?
Yeah. Should you want me to do it for 20 seconds?
Yeah.
Da-na-na, 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 da-na-na. Da-na-na, da-na-na,
okay.
Da-na-na.
Okay. All right. Now, I want you to do that at half the speed. Go ahead.
Okay. Da-na-na, 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 da-na-na.
Okay. All right. Now, which one do you think your brain was moving faster, the normal speed or the slowest speed?
It felt like the normal speed.
I would, my own personal feeling would be the slower speed, because he has to think about actually doing it slower versus what comes natural to what he's learned how to do.
No. Anytime that you do something consciously slower, you reduce the brain waves in your head.
Interesting.
Oh, wow.
Okay. So now, Andy,
sorry to feel that.
All right. So Andy, let's go back to the first tee. Okay.
Okay.
The club that you belong to,
yeah.
I want you now to talk with your eyes, but talk. So describe the tee shot that you want to hit on your first tee, but describe it at half the speed. Go ahead. Your first tee shot.
Don't hit it left. It's, no, I'm just kidding. okay, so
half the speed, half the speed.
All right. I am going to hit this tee ball. My target is the left edge of this, is the middle of the second bunker. And I'm going to hit a high fade off of that bunker and land it in the middle of the fairway on the stripe.
Perfect. So the reason that I know that your brain waves are low is because we've measured this thousands of times.
Wow, that's so interesting.
Just by doing that, you have made the target the king. You have lowered the noise in your head. You have replaced, oh, there's my buddy, don't hit it left or right by doing this, that. So that's a technique I've actually taught caddies.
Wow.
Who work with players is as they're describing the shot to the player, I have them intentionally describe it slower.
Wow.
So you're saying that not necessarily the concept of quieting the mind, quote unquote, is more surrounding actually the speed at which you are describing it in your own brain as you are preparing to hit that shot. It's the speed, actually. It's slowing it down so your brain can process it better.
Yes. Well, if you remember, one of the attributes of being in a zone is slow. You know, light, quiet, calm, free. That is one of the attributes. And here's the other, in my opinion, there are many things that make golf so hard, but there's some things that actually make golf very easy. So in a five-hour round of golf, so I don't know how long a round of golf is for you guys, but let's just say for the sake of math, it's 5 hours, right, for the average club guy. How many minutes of that 5 hours do you think you have to be in that quiet state?
Yeah, that's an interesting question.
It's a lot lower than what people minutes? Think. Yeah.
It's less than 10 minutes.
Yeah, that's
okay. It's crazy.
Low-key, that was a good
10
guess.
Minutes out of 5 hours is doable.
Yeah.
That's a reasonable ask of ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So I actually work with a lot of college coaches. And one of the things that I've trained them to do is, hey, when your team goes out, right, don't put the pressure on them. Hey, I got to be perfect for 5.5 hours out there. Give them the freedom to not be perfect because that's the human condition.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Say, hey, I only need you to be perfect when you're over the ball.
Does like, it matter? Is it better to have a quiet mind in between shots or does it not matter?
Oh, it's absolutely better, but I think it's harder. I think it's too much to do that over 5 hours.
Yeah. Okay.
And you know, I used to do Ironmans, and Ironmans are 17 hours. You know, total time. And you know, that's a long time to it's really hard. I mean, I teach this stuff. I cannot be in a zone state all day long. I actually look at my calendar, and I look at which meetings I have that I need to be in a zone state because I can't do it all day long.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be in bed at 6:30 every day. It's exhausting to be in a zone. So I think that golfers unfairly put the pressure on themselves that, oh, I got to be perfect for 5 hours. No, you don't. Mm-hmm. Why do you have to be perfect when you hit your shot and you're walking or driving to your ball? If you're thinking about something else, go ahead. But as you start your pre-shot routine, again, that's one of, so we call these neurohacks about talking with your eyes slowly. You can start to do that.
Wow. That's pretty cool.
It brings me to just thoughts surrounding like, you know, if there's times where, let's say you for example, it was just our club championship. You're by human nature, you are going to be nervous or you're going to be, excited. Or if you have like, if you're gambling, if you're playing a game for some money and it's a little bit that puts you in an uncomfortable position, I'm feeling as though it actually allows you to accept that there is this pressure, but then it provides you with a tool set on in the immediate point when you need to be at full concentration, you have the tools to establish that concentration and really be able to deliver on what you're trying to accomplish.
Yeah. So I think one of the things that might be helpful for your audience is to define pressure. I feel like pressure is almost a cliche, and I'll give you the neuroscientific definition of pressure. It's not very sexy at all, but it is what it is. So pressure is nothing more than two things in your brain. Number one, the quantity of brainwaves, so thoughts, is very high. And number two, the intensity of them is also high. So intensity means the negativity of them.
Yeah.
That's all pressure is. So what is the opposite of that? So the opposite of that is you have fewer thoughts and they're not negative. So I think when you can think of pressure less as a cliche and as a curse and more as a problem to solve, it's a lot easier to solve. And the problem to solve is when I'm under pressure, no matter what the circumstances, whether it's a club championship, a putt to win something, I must understand, oh, I have a lot of thoughts. So thoughts can be, I got to make this, for that. People are watching. You know, having lots of thoughts is not a character flaw. It's part of being human, right? But for an athlete, they must recognize, oh, I have lots of thoughts in my heads right now. That means my muscle sequencing, my force, and my ability to hold a target are going to be compromised. So all I have to do is to reduce the number of thoughts and replace them with something more positive. So I actually tweeted out my tweet this morning, ironically, was, you know, I think it's very difficult. I don't think I know this. That, you know, people always say visualize the shot that you want to hit, visualize the shot that you want to hit. And again, this is another one of those accidental, unintentional, counterintuitive discoveries. I have found that it can be very difficult in many circumstances to visualize something that has not happened. It's a lot easier to visualize something that you have successfully done. So if I have a 5-iron, and there's water around everywhere on this green, and I'm trying to attack this pin. Because if I can get, you know, if I can get on this green in two, I can make birdie, I can win. So if there's water all the way around, and, you know, I think the prevailing thought is, okay, visualize that shot. And I found that it's very difficult for the brain to visualize something that it has not done yet. However, if you can think back to the last amazing 5-iron shot that you hit, like that happened. That's real. Mm-hmm. You were there. You did it. That's a lot easier for your brain to recall. So, you know, my tweet this morning was that our future needs our past success. Like, I feel like our past success are the most underutilized asset that we have. Like, every golfer, when they walk off the course on the 18th hole, I promise you, it happens at my club, it happens with my best friends. They will start by telling you the worst 10 shots that they hit.
Absolutely. Like,
we are so bad about that. But I also promise you there are 5 or 6 amazing shots that they've also hit. Where did those shots go? So it's really in order to be mentally tough, you must recognize what pressure is, and you must have the ability to replace them with your past success, because your past success lives in your brain. It's the easiest one to access. It's not somebody else's success. You were there. You pulled it off. So people should take inventory when they leave the golf course instead of their bad shots, of their good shots.
Yeah.
I have a son that plays junior golf. He's getting his last year of high school. He's going to play college golf in the next year. And, you know, one of the things that I had him do since he was probably 10, 11 years old is after each round, like our debrief always started with Hunter. His name is Hunter. I said, Hunter, tell me about, because I would watch him play. I'd say, Hunter, you tell me your 3 best shots and I'll tell you the 3 best shots that I saw you hit. Like all of our conversations start there.
So you're just building a bank of those good shots. That,
and no matter what you're talking about, even if you didn't play great, you're thinking about positive things.
Yes. Again, positive has low frequency.
Yeah.
So it's a good thing because there's no drama with positivity. Like if there's something negative, there was a consequence. So the brain is processing a lot more.
Do you, if you can, so like we've talked about a couple things thought-wise, like visualizing the target, seeing the target, and finding that like sticky or holdable thing, holding it. So is it better to be just focused on that? And are you saying you would visualize like the shot that you hit to that target? And if you need to lean back on a past memory of hitting a similar shot, you can do that in that moment. Like when you, like, I'm just thinking like when you're over the ball, are you thinking about the target or the execution of hitting
or the shot shape
to that target? Or is always, that player dependent?
No. Look, golf is a target sport. So I will tell you that if the target is playing in your head in some fashion, you know, maybe it's a trajectory, maybe it's a starting point, maybe it's a finishing point. If there's some semblance of what you want that ball to do playing in your head, you will naturally have good tempo. Your body will naturally do what it is capable of doing. Yeah. When I work with I've worked with quarterbacks in college and the NFL, and one of the things that they tell me is that when they're in this alpha theta green state, as I call it, they can see the 2 inches in front of the DB's hand, and they can see the ball going past that. Like, that's how clear it is. Mm. So, but, and again, I've never thrown, I mean, I have thrown a football, but I've never played football in my life. I mean, I'm from Africa. Football is soccer over there. but, you know, so I don't understand football. I would never allow my son to play football. It's just gladiator, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, I don't know how those people survive that. But even in a sport when you have 12 giant men trying to knock you out, like permanently from the game, like even in that moment, if you have a target in your head, like those guys are never thinking, oh, let me take my arm this far back or let me throw it this hard. They see something and it's so clear in their mind that, I mean, this guy was telling me he can see 2 inches in front of the DB's hands. Like, I don't, and with my NASCAR guy, you know, so in NASCAR, and again, I've never driven a NASCAR car and I don't know much about that sport, but he tells me when he's in this state, he can see the hole. Do you know what the hole is? The hole is like, so when you have cars, like it's all crowded there, a hole is there's going to be an opening because you can see how fast the cars in front of you are moving. Mm-hmm. And so in the hole before it happens, you can find it and pick up 2 or 3 spots. Mm. That requires that sort of very quiet state. But all of that, because you would never think of NASCAR as a target sport, but that's how you move up. That's how you pass other cars, is you look for these holes, but they're not obvious. It's not like the cars just open, the cars just say, here, you know, go. Like, you have to anticipate all of that in microseconds. So target is always king.
What have been some of the things that you've, like, I'm looking at, we have a GC quad here, and on the TrackMan, it shows you a shot tracer of the shot. And I've heard of people like seeing that blue line, the shot tracer, as a common one of a visualization. I'm curious, like, if you've heard of other ones or unique things that players do to be, to kind of have that sticky or holdable target.
Oh, dozens and dozens and dozens. And again, at the end of the day, I actually talked about this in one of my other podcasts with Carl, and I'll tell you just a really sad story. There's an LPGA player that came to see me, and, you know, tee to green, she was amazing. And around the greens, she was just awful. And when she came to me, you know, I would look at her brain tee to green and it was amazing. I'd look at her brain around the greens and it was literally another human being. Mm. And I asked her, I said, hey, so what are you thinking? And she said, well, I'm a linear putter. And I said, a linear putter? I said, who told you that? And she works with this putting coach, and the putting coach told her that she's a linear putter. And you're either a linear putter or a non-linear putter. And I said, well, did that coach look into your brain to tell you that? And he said, no. But in her mind, she got convinced that she needs to see everything in a straight line. And she doesn't do that tee to green. So I think, frankly, it is enjoyable. It is part of being an athlete and part of enjoying golf, because we play golf. I mean, we have 18 stadiums, basically, right? These are 18 arenas that we perform in. And every target is there. You are never going to have the same shot or the same target. You will never have the same putt. So it is liberating to go to walk to a green where your ball is and say, okay, which is the most holdable target? And so everything from old pitch marks to entry points to the sound of the ball going in, to the sound of the ball hitting the back of the cup, to seeing, you know, that blue line that you talk just at the end of it. But the brain likes that. The brain does not like to be in a cage. Like, being labeled as a linear putter is putting the brain in a cage. You are doing the worst thing that you can do. So I mean, we are some of the most sophisticated living creatures ever.
Yeah.
On planet Earth. So if you put us in a situation where we have to be resilient, we'll find a way. And I think part of the beauty of the game of golf, unlike, say, basketball, where it's the same court, the same target, you know, is walk up to a green and say, I'm going to enjoy finding a target on this putt that I can hold.
Yeah, and that's cool.
It might be a shadow. It might be a shadow of the flag. It might be a shadow of a tree. It might be an old pitch mark. Like, enjoy that process and say, okay, based on this one, I'm going to send the ball towards that target.
Yeah.
It makes me kind of think of, like, so let's say you're walking up to this green and you're talking about, I'm going to enjoy this target. I'm going to find something that I can hold in my mind and really, you know, focus 100%. But then you get into your process, right? People circle they look from behind the hole, and then they look from down the line, and then they get bent down and try to see the break, and then they're doing a couple practice strokes. So just right now, I've just described how you can have like 4, 5, 6 different things entering in your mind, like you were talking about before. Every 3 to 10 seconds, you're getting another thought instead of strictly focusing on that target like you're describing.
Yeah. So I think I told you I have hundreds and hundreds of people that come to see me for a putting lesson. And I told you that I've never changed anyone's putter, their grip, or their stroke, right? But I've changed almost everyone's so-called routine. I found that almost all, and this is, again, just one of those gosh darn counterintuitive things, because people always say, oh, stay in your routine, stick to your routine. But you cannot trick the brain. Once the brain knows what the target is, which most of us know pretty quickly, if you're doing the routine for the sake of doing it, your mind is going to wander. So I say, change your routine to a process. Find a target that you can hold. As soon as you do, go to your ball and hold the target. Sometimes it'll take 3 seconds, sometimes 10, sometimes 15, sometimes 20. Who cares? But once you found the target that you can hold, go to your ball and hold the target, which is very different from, okay, I'm going to spend 2 seconds over here, 3 seconds over there. I'm going to go blow the hole. I'm going to look at it from this angle. That's a routine. Those routines, when your mind wanders 3 to 10 seconds, they are hurting us. And I've seen it in people's brain. I've literally seen the brains go up and down, up and down. Now they're fighting themselves when they go back to the ball. Okay, well, what the hell did I just do?
Yeah.
And now, so again, these are not things I was looking for. Like, I didn't know that that's what the brain was doing. Like,
yeah, it's actually really funny that you say that, because there, you know, I have my routine, and you go through your routine, and there's times where I then get back standing over the putt, and you're like, what did I even just look at? Because your brain was wandering.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, if you think about when you putt the best, for me, it's just, I just see the ball going in the hole.
Exactly. Pretty simple. That means that basically what you just said is you're holding a target.
Yeah. I mean, and I really like this idea too, of having the freedom to find that holdable target on each shot. You know, instead of having like a system, you're not teaching like a system of like, see this or see blue lines or see, it's like, have the freedom to step into every shot as its own adventure, maybe, and kind of find that best target on that specific shot.
Right. As a neuroscientist, my goal is to have as much less noise in your head as possible.
Mm-hmm.
That's, you know, not only will you play better, but you'll enjoy it better. Right. So finding a target that you can hold forces you to be in the present moment, because you're looking for something in this moment that you can hold. And that's the beauty of golf, is you have 18 stadiums.
Mm-hmm. So, and, you know, there's times where like people talk about like an intermediate target, you know, where they're lining up, et cetera, but that's not necessarily the target. That's just like lining up square. Right. So
exactly. What a good point. So I always tell people, you know, alignment and target are not the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the you might have an alignment target, but alignment target is not the ball target, where you want to send the ball ultimately.
Right.
Yeah. Hey, so I know we only have a couple minutes left here, but I did want to ask you. So my current pre-round routine is, especially for a big round, get in the car, crank up some real aggressive, like 3-6 Mafia rap. at full volume. Like, I don't know why I do this. I honestly have no idea. I think it's just conditioning, probably from like playing team sports in the past.
Quiet your brain.
Really? Okay.
Well, sure.
I just try to get myself jacked up. I don't, that's probably not the right move, right?
No, I don't think so at all. I would do the opposite of that. Like find music that, you know, I know this sounds weird. I trust me. I know it sounds weird, and you may have
laughed. I'm into whatever.
Find music that you feel can put you to sleep.
Okay. Yeah. So I'm probably doing that wrong. Just being honest, I try to get to where I'm ready to run through a wall by the time we get up to the first two.
It might be like listening to like you know you hear like a babbling brook or like
you can do like ASMR
or whatever.
Yeah,
that's interesting.
One of the things that I will tell you is as a habit, and I did one of my videos on this is, you know, when you park your car at the golf course, just take literally 2 minutes, 2-3 minutes max, and before you open the door to get out of the car, you know, just close your eyes, and remember 2 or 3 really good shots that you hit. Like a simple thing like that can help you calm down. When you open your car door, maybe you walk just a half a second slower.
Right?
And because, you know, the higher, because we are so, all of us, we're so used to moving at 500 miles an hour with everything that, you know, I always tell people that golfers are human beings. Like who you are off the golf course is who's going to show up on the golf course.
And so who we are. Being, or you had, you know, a fight with your spouse, or you had whatever, you just, you know, you had somebody had some road rage as you're driving to the course or any of these things.
Exactly. So, you know, this is one of those really horrible things about being human is, you know, most of our performance is predetermined. It's a result of all the noise in our head. And as long, and again, it can be a life's journey to eliminate all of that noise. So, like I said to you, and this to me is probably the most important message for all of your listeners is negotiate with yourself. Tell yourself, I don't need to be perfect for 5 hours. I just need to be perfect for about 10 minutes.
Yeah.
That negotiation with yourself over the ball is, in my opinion, the best you can do.
Wow.
Because you cannot be it's so hard, excuse me, to be mentally and physically, emotionally, financially healthy. Like we're all human beings, right? We're just trying to figure out what this thing is and get through each day and, you know, not wreck ourselves or the people that we love. So I think it's a very doable ask to say, hey, I only got to be perfect for about 10 minutes.
Yeah. I think that's a great, you know, thing to think about is you only have to be really focused for that 10 minutes and you can enjoy 4 or 5 hours because of that 10 minutes.
Dr. Justice, where do our listeners find more of you? How do they reach you? Like, it sounds like you're doing coaching, all kinds of things. Plug what you have going on for a minute.
Thank you. Yeah. Well, most of my work is actually not even in sports. I use most of my real business is through the corporate space, but I love athletes and I love golf. My son plays golf. He's getting ready to go to college. But my website is Gyra Golf. So GYRAGolf.com. You can follow me on Instagram at Dr. Izzy Justice or Twitter at Izzy Justice. I try to make all of my social media. I have a guy that sort of helps me with that. But all of my social media is always positive. I don't do any negative stuff. I don't comment on people send me stuff and say, hey, you know, what do you think about this? And even if it's wrong, I will not comment. I want to be clean out there. I feel like teaching people how to use their brain is an amazing gift to give people, especially in the noisy world that we live in. So that's ultimately my true mission is that, you know, when the average EEG of a normal person today is the same as a schizophrenic patient, that's the real pandemic that we're in.
Yeah.
And I'm on a mission to go change that. And I think golf is a backdoor way to do that.
Yeah.
You know? And it's a great sport. It's a spa. It's so nice to be outside and, enjoying nature and hitting that little white ball.
I love it. Well, thanks so much for coming on the podcast. We really appreciate having you. This has been one of my favorite episodes.
All right. Take care, guys. Thanks for having me.
Thanks.